be found that we have no idea.
I'd like to know where mine is. However, the beam ship videotape.
Yes.
I think surpasses Volume 1, and it probably will be a classic unto itself as well. Because, Bob, you will not only get to see the pictures that are in Volume 1, or many of them, but you'll also get to see the movie footage.
That's another thing. I was curious as to why this case, as explicit as it is in its evidence, has not been detailed at all, like in the book by Fawcett and Greenwood, Clear Intent.
Mm-hmm.
And no one's even mentioned a word of it in there, even in passing. And it seems so remarkable, it's almost as if I've shown it to people and they look at me like, that's incredible, but is it for real?
I think one of the reasons is that Larry Fawcett, for instance, just doesn't have the hard evidence at his disposal, so it would be sort of improper for him to make too much comment about it.
Oh. Well, let me ask you this. Volume 2, is it going to be as hard to find as Volume 1 has been?
There are limited quantities left of Volume 2, but if you write the address, it's been given several times
right.
on this show.
Go ahead and give it again.
Okay, it's Post Office Drawer JJ, Munns Park, Arizona. Address it to Genesis 3, Roman numeral 3, Munns Park, Arizona, P.O. Box JJ, 86017, and we'll try to find a copy for you.
Terrific.
We do
Thanks
have
very much.
Some of those copies left.
And
now, as I said earlier, we are barred, or I should say, these two books are under auction right now from New York, and we cannot reprint them.
Oh.
And the reason we can't is because there's a mainstream book being written as we talk on this case. It'll be out in about 12, 14 months. So as courtesy to the writer and the publisher, we've agreed not to compete against this book with Volume 1 or 2, so we will be holding it back for 2 or 3 years.
Can you give any clue as to the name or the publisher of this book?
I can't get into that now.
Okay.
Okay?
Thanks a lot.
But if you can get Volume 2, you'll be very happy with it.
I'd love to.
Keep mine under lock and key.
The one I got is a publisher's defect. It's put, you know, a couple of the sections are upside down, but I bought it anyway because it's the only thing I could find after 2 years. And it's somewhat of a collector's item on top of that.
Well, Volume 2 is just as excellent in the picture and the photography. It answers a lot of the questions that were unanswered in Volume 1.
Terrific. Thanks a lot.
All right, Bob.
Bye-bye.
And we have another Bob on the line. Bob, welcome aboard. There you are, Bob.
Yes.
I hit the wrong button.
Yes, hi. I was wondering about this recent flap. About 6 weeks ago, I was outside about 2 a.m., and I saw a flight of three oval objects over the San Gabriel Mountains. I live in Pasadena.
Now, this is 3 weeks ago?
About 6 weeks ago. And it was about 2 o'clock in the morning.
Well, you know, they came right over my house. What was I doing? Sleeping.
I've never seen anything. They were in absolutely strict formation, perfectly spaced out from each other. There were three of them. And they held this formation and skimmed right over Mount Wilson. And you could see them passing in front of portions of the mountain, but actually moving through a cloud layer. There were some scattered clouds.
You say they were oval objects?
They were oval, and they were completely white.
And this was nighttime?
And it was 2 a.m., so yeah, they were illuminated from inside, it looked like streetlights almost, but they were flying.
Were they windows or just an orb of light?
The whole shape was lit, was glowing. A very definite oval form. And no sound whatsoever that I could hear at this distance. So they must have been about 2.5 to 3 miles away from me.
Mm-hmm.
But it was very strange because I never had seen anything like that before in this area, at least.
Well, there has been an increase in sighting activity in Southern California, uh-huh. Arizona, New Mexico, this area.
And I was wondering also in the films, are there situations where you can see part of the landscape behind the object and portions in front? That's what this situation was like.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, because I know I've done a lot of films myself with miniatures, and the hardest thing to do is to put a large or a living object like a person or a large moving tree or something like that in front of something that's small. That's where you really get into problems.
Yeah, the perspective,
uh-huh.
Whenever you really start analyzing the perspective of the craft as it moves toward you and then back, uh-huh. you know you're not dealing with a model.
And also shadows. Do you ever see shadows, interplay of the shadows from the vehicle on the ground or on people in,
yes, you do.
In the scene. Because I know that's another area where things can get very difficult.
Well, you know, Bill, if I could interject one thing here, a story we've heard, I don't know if it's true or not, but if you ever get a chance to talk to Spielberg, it might be worth asking him this, but when he was shooting Close Encounters, we heard that they had spent a lot of money trying to get a daylight scene that looked real with a UFO, and they finally gave up after a large dollar amount. And that's why in that film, all the scenes are night footage, or, you know, or at nighttime. And so, anyway, at that period of time, this is back, I think, with 78, 79, the studio contacted Mr. Tom Welch. If you ever have Tom on the line, Bill,
yes,
have him tell you this story. But he and Wendell met with the studio heads over there, and they asked one question. They said, hey, we'll pay Meyer. We'll pay him six, seven figures if he'll just tell us how he's doing it. I was sitting in Switzerland at the time with Billy in his living room. The phone rang. And now this is the studio corporate headquarters calling, and Wendell and Tom are there. They're with three of the top executives, and the question to me to ask Billy was, how do you do it? I asked him, I said, look, now, Billy, answer this properly, because, you know, you can send your kids to Switzerland, you know, to a private Swiss school here with the type of money they're talking about. So just be honest. How do you do it? He thought for a minute, and he said, oh, just tell him it just happens. And that was his answer, so I repeated it to Tom, who repeated it to the executive, and that was the end of that story. But this actually happened. Now, the Spielberg thing, I don't know, but we heard that story.
So you'll find it quite fascinating to look at the footage yourself if you
want. Yes, I really would like to, because having shot a lot of this kind of thing with small-scale models, I would have a pretty good idea right away of what I was seeing.
Okay?
Yeah, okay. Thanks.
All right, Bob, thank you very much for your input. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind.
Oh, thank you. Hi, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
Me? The reason I'm calling is I heard the...
Can you speak up just a little bit?
Oh, is that better?
Yeah, that's better.
The reason I'm calling is that I heard the recorded sound of the ship.
We'll do that again also, give you some more of it.
Okay. The thing that kind of interested me was the fundamental frequency. I believe you said 7.85 hertz.
Right in that area, the Earth resonance, I guess it's generally known as, or the Schumann resonance.
Now, is that the electrical resonance?
No, that's... no, that's a sound.
It's natural, Bill.
It's a natural resonance of the Earth.
It's the natural electromagnetic resonance of Earth. It was discovered by Nikola Tesla.
Right, right.
Okay? And it's it varies. Well, his was at 6.6 cycles. Then Schumann came in, discovered a second resonance at 7.8 cycles per second.
So you are saying this is an electrical resonance.
Well, it would be, it would be an electromagnetic resonance. It's one of the dangerous resonances, actually, that is involved with the woodpecker sounds that are being broadcast into the Soviet Union, from the Soviet Union to us.
Well, let me ask you, Lee, what significance, you know, with your research and stuff like that, what kind of significance do you, attribute to that very low frequency?
Could you repeat that, Bill? I can't hear.
He wanted to know what significance you attribute to the fact that the consistent frequency that is coming up on the scopes is that very low frequency of 7.885.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I'm not really qualified to get into this, but basically, as a real vague overview, there are a lot of theories. There's a gentleman down in New Zealand, I think, by the name of... the name escapes me right now, but he's done a lot of work in... that area, but a lot of people feel that the spacecraft are using electromagnetic grid points for their grounding, if we want to call that, so they can ground into this, I don't know if atmosphere is the right word or not.
Magnetic lines of energy. They seem to have a floating effect at sometimes, as if they are riding these undulating magnetic waves.
I think I've read about something like this. Isn't there a guy in Florida who has written a book dealing with this grid system covering the Earth?
Got me.
I don't know. The man in New Zealand, his name escapes me, but he's done some work in Harmonics 33 and several other books.
Well, maybe it's the same guy.
I thought he was from Florida.
Gentlemen,
I hope you can get him on your show some night. It would really be interesting to talk to Bill, and that's David Froning, right over in your area in Pacific Palisades.
David Froning?
David Froning, and he is very knowledgeable in this area, and he's got a lot of theories, and he's done a lot of work, and he's followed the Meyer case for about 5 years now.
If
you can get him, it would be an interesting show.
I'm always looking for interesting shows.
One further question, please. You know that the sound that you played over the radio,
mm-hmm.
was that of a ship hovering?
I didn't hear that.
Was the sounds that we played,
yes.
Was the ship hovering? I suspect it was more or less moving around a little bit, but within range of where Billy was recording.
Yes. There's an interesting story behind that recording. Not only was Billy recording, but also his wife, Poppy, was recording. The kids were there. There were three or four other people there. They never saw the ship. The ship never materialized during the recording. And the recording is like 30 to 5, 40 minutes long. Billy was approximately 150 yards away from his wife. They were separated. Each had a tape recorder, and each recorded the sounds. And the witnesses told us, and we really cross-examined them over a period of days, but they told us they never saw the ship, number one. Number two, what amazed them was there was really no source. I mean, they could not get out of range from it. It seemed like it was everywhere, all-encompassing. If they moved to the right, it was still there. If they moved to the left, it was still there.
It seems I recall Wendell telling us one evening that some of the people from the nearby village all started coming up because they were hearing it, too.
Yes, that's very true. The sound was heard at a great distance. I think it was like a half mile away. And people from other villages, farmers working in the field heard it, and they came to the source. But no one ever saw anything, and that's what was amazing.
Well, it sounds pretty fascinating.
But after you see Beam Ship, though, the movie footage, it's not really that amazing, because when that ship dematerializes...
Right in front of you.
Right in front of you, and you can see almost like a light shift occur, whereas the scenery, it's almost like an umbrella appears above the craft and bends light away from the scene, because the scene under and around the area where the ship is hovering becomes much darker.
And it also has this very same phenomenon. The shift in light happens just before it reappears.
Yes.
A 30th of a second or something, or 3/10 of a second. There is a consistency in the time of that.
It's 3/20, Bill. 3/20 of a second, and it's prior and after. It's prior to the dematerialization and after it rematerializes.
That's being looked at very carefully right now by John Bedini and Tom Bearden and some of the other people I know who understand those things. They have an explanation, by the way.
I'd love to hear it.
It's rather involved, but I want you to hear it when you get into town.
I would love to, and I'd love David Froning to hear that, too.
Okay, does that help you?
One more thing. Please.
Okay.
What was the name of the tape again?
The name of the tape.
Beam Ship, the movie footage. We're calling the whole trilogy. We're producing a trilogy of approximately 4 hours
uh-huh.
on this case. And what we're doing is editing down 12 hours of footage shot by NTV in 79 and 80 into a 4-hour trilogy. And we call it the Beam Ship Trilogy. And the first tape produced is Beam Ship, the movie footage. And the second is Beam Ship, the metal. And it'll be available here in about 5 days.
Now, when you say Beam Ship, that's like B-A-M?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay.
That's what they call the ship, so
right.
We can't figure any reason why we should call them anything else.
And I like it much better than UFO or flying saucers or alien encounters. Has a nice ring to it, and that's what they refer to their ships as.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And we have Edward on the line.
Good evening.
Hello, Edward.
Good evening, Bill, and good evening, Lee.
Mm-hmm.
I hope you don't hear my heart, because I am so excited that you finally have somebody I can really get into. And Lee, welcome.
Well, thank you.
I've been in contact with Genesis least since 1980, and I have both volumes of the photo journals. And,
you have both volumes, huh?
Yeah, low
one
and low
volume one.
You...
I have low serial numbers, too. And I also have the tape, which I just received a couple of weeks ago.
Could you hold it, Edward, because I've got a little something I've got to do.
Sure.
And then you can have it, Lee, here as a...
Okay, Lee, Bill said that he could never take anyone with him as close as he could get to the spacecraft, and so they had to stay behind. In the Beamship movie, there's a sequence where he goes up into the mountain and he sits down and you see the Beamship in the distance.
Mm-hmm.
But there seems to be movement of the camera. It looks like, I can't remember right now, but it's either a widening of the zoom or a close-up or whatever.
Okay, yes. What is occurring at that point is the Japanese film crew, they are zooming in, not Billy, not his camera. Okay.
They were taking pictures of Billy's movie projector.
Yes, I was aware of that, but it seems to me that what I'm referring to actually occurred in the actual footage, not the footage that the Japanese were doing. But that's okay. I can accept that because while I had the books, there was always a doubt in the back of my head about the reality of this thing. After I got the Beamship footage, I said, this is it. This is for real.
Do you really feel that way about that footage?
Well, I have an RCA VCR.
Yeah.
And it has a special effect at the top of the line. So
yeah.
I'm able to not only put it in slow motion, but I can slow it down even more.
Good.
And what happens is, when the Beamship disappears in a few sequences,
right.
I can slow the tape down so that when it reappears, it reappears slowly as a point of light that gets brighter, as opposed to just coming on, you know, which would indicate to people that it would be a fake whatever. Here is proof that this thing is originating out of nowhere.
Now you understand why we release this tape.
Yes, it's great.
It's obvious it's not a cut film clip, isn't it?
No, that's what I'm trying to say, that it is not, that it is one straight sequence. And, of course, the darkening of the area's green trees and the grass and all that, that's mind-blowing. This is mind-blowing. What is happening here?
Let me ask you a question. On the scene, in the scene where the ship jumps from the top of the screen to the bottom.
Right.
Okay, right above the knoll. Have you slowed that down?
Yeah, definitely. I've looked at that a million times.
Oh,
super slow motion.
Then you actually see that ship materialize in two stages.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Good.
Yes, I can confirm that. Yes, that I'm not a professional photographer, although I'm a professional quality photographer, and I do know when somebody's faking something or when they're not, and at least the Beamship footage is for real. I can do without all the other before and after. Just the footage of the spaceship. That's worth the $60.
Okay. Well, I'm glad.
By the way, I'd like to pass this on to all those who are listening. The book, UFO Contact from the Pleiades, a Preliminary Investigation Report, is available.
Where?
It is advertised in the October issue of Fate magazine on page 19. America West Distributors in Aurora, Colorado is selling it. It's the original book, by the way, with the original cover. I have a friend who has the original one.
Well, I had a friend call over to Colonel Stevens' residence where his daughter is, and they were trying to order some of these books, and they said they were out. There were no more, so...
Oh, well, I was possibly one of the first ones to order then, and I got real fast service, just like I always get a good, great service from you and Genesis 3.
Uh-huh. When did you order it?
The book, I ordered it at the beginning of October, and I got it a couple of weeks later.
Uh-huh.
And as soon as I got the Fate issue, right at the end of September or the beginning of October, that's when I saw it.
I think it's out now. I mean, I think they're out of copies now, but anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I really appreciate your call on Beamship the movie.
Yeah, and
there's
by the way...
one thing you've done, Edward.
Yes.
I know my wife is not going to appreciate you, because now I'm going to have to get me one of those gizmos on my VCR that slows things down.
Oh, yes, for sure. Always a top model. Never go for anything less. And by the way, your wife is going to be in company of Potsy and... what's his name? The guy with the alien bases on the moon? None of them like me either. I can always tell a fake when I see one. Thank you very much, Lee. I hope that more comes from your end, and let's have more, yeah.
Order the metal tape. You'll really like that as well.
Okay, you'll see my check soon.
Okay, thanks a lot.
And thank you, Bill.
All right, Edward, thank you for contributing like that. Maureen, you're on. We have just about a minute, but let's get it started with you anyway.
Okay, great. Thanks. Well, to start out with, I wanted to share with you that I've really enjoyed the opportunity of reading the material about the Pleiades. We have both of the books, and we have a very good friend who spent quite a bit of time in Switzerland with Billy.
Oh, really?
And out of her visit there, a number of questions came up, and I thought maybe we might be able to address some of them for us.
Okay. Start firing. I'll tell you when you have to stop.
Okay. Well, the first one is that when she was there in Switzerland, there were lots and lots and lots of pictures available that haven't been seen previously in the books, and also many manuscripts, primarily in German. And we're a little curious as to why those haven't been made available at this time, or up until now.
Did you hear that, Lee?
I heard part of it. Something about there were many more pictures, or...
Well, oh, there's our little thing.
Okay.
Well, the question, let me put it to you quickly. There were pictures that haven't been seen over here whenever she visited Billy. And, of course, she saw a lot of the German manuscripts, and she wondered why they're not available in English. And there's a good answer for those, Maureen. If you want to hang on the line while we take a break for news...
I will.
Get back to Lee after that.
Okay.
We're talking about the astronauts from Pleiades. Photographs and the hard evidence that they do exist as it comes from Billy Meyer. So stay with us. Been a prolific writer. And some of the photographs that were available over there, there hadn't seemed to be available over here.
Okay, well, Maureen, you've just brought up a question that is one of the reasons many of us do believe that this case is real, and that's because there is so much information on it. Now, when we got involved, we had to set up priorities, and these priorities involved, thus far, have involved two books that were published, two Japanese television specials that have aired, a documentary film that still hasn't been released, but will be, hopefully, soon. And other things, and a mainstream book in the works now. So we have just, we've had to take it by the numbers. And if that answers your question, with this new direction we're taking of releasing this material in stages, eventually we'll get to this, hopefully.
Great, Lee, I understand. Well, that actually brings up one other question, which is... when my friend was over there, she had long discussions with Billy, and he kept saying, why don't the people in the United States know about my book? Why don't they know about my material? Have they forgotten about me? And it seems to appear that Billy doesn't realize financially or in any other way, I mean, consciously, that we know about his books, that we're aware of what he's doing here in the United States. Is there something that happened with the rights of the book or something where he is not participating in this, or he doesn't realize what's happening?
I would have to question your friend's information there, because Billy has been informed all the way through. When you see the Beam Ship series, you'll see that he's in this film all the way.
Mm-hmm.
He has received various monies for his share of the rights. We have made arrangements to take care of him in that way.
Mm-hmm.
It's been estimated that over 200 to 300 million people are aware of this case. Case in point, the Japanese special played to roughly 30 million people alone.
I think that's quite interesting in itself, Lee, that the Japanese did a special on Billy Meyer and turned in an audience in Japan of 30 million.
Exactly.
Now, for some reason or another, the great minds at ABC and CBS and NBC don't think this is much of a story. Of course, you can look at what they put on the air that they think are good stories and understand, I suppose.
Right. Well, when the PM segment ran, Bill, in 1980, that was 7 minutes. Remember PM Magazine when
yes.
it was
mm-hmm.
on? They a TV station out of Tucson, KOLD, went to Wendell, asked if they could film 7 minutes. We agreed. They shot 7 minutes. The major... I guess the home office, whatever you want to call it, out of San Francisco, they picked it up. It played to 50 markets. Estimated 35 million people saw this in this country. It was so well received that PM came back to us in 1981 and asked for rerun privileges. It was the most sought after special they had done in 1980, and we granted this. So there are a lot of people aware of the Meyer case. And I'd have to say that I don't think your friend is being very honest with this situation, because I just got a letter from Billy last week. He's in fine spirits. He's very happy. He's excited about everything. And he's very much aware of everything going on. And he's not upset with us or anybody else connected with this program.
Well, I'm really happy to hear that, actually. Well, there's a couple of other things that I was curious about. I had heard something about a movie script and some rights to a movie script that possibly went over to Universal at one time based on the material. Are you aware of any of that?
Bill, could you repeat it? I can barely hear.
She was asking about that first movie that was made that went over to Universal for a while and then it's kind of floated around.
Oh, that's, yes, I'm very much aware of that. I'm very much aware of the writer. In fact, in 1978, I took this writer and three other people. I will not mention their names at this point. One of them today is number two man at a major television network in the documentary division. But I escorted the four of them into Switzerland. They met Meyer. And then I understand a script was done, but it was never sold. And I understand that every now and then we get a drift that somebody's looking at it, but nothing has ever been done on it, as far as I know.
Lee, the other thing I was wondering about is, I know that it seems as if, maybe it's not actually so, but it seems as if sometimes that we are suppressing a lot of this information and trying to keep it out of the public's eye. And I was wondering if Wendell's having been in jail might have anything to do with that suppression of information.
Well, that's a question I'd rather not get into, Marie, if you don't mind. I think that's something that Wendell should answer, not myself.
Okay, I understand. And the last thing I was curious about is, have you had contact yourself personally with Semyazi since the time you've been in Switzerland?
No, I haven't. My wife and I, we have seen light shows there late at night.
Uh-huh.
We have witnessed phenomena, which was unexplainable, but I've never seen, to the best of my knowledge, I've never seen a Palladian cosmonaut, nor have I seen a Palladian ship, beam ship.
I understand. Willie, thank you very much for taking the time to answer my questions.
Maureen, thank you for your interest.
Thank you.
You know, this case was the very first open mind show we ever did, was on Billy Meyer with Wendell.
Exciting.
And it's odd that my introduction to Billy Meyer came about a year before when I was approached to do that screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't believe in flying saucers, but when I saw the material, I was more than happy to do the screenplay, but then it never did materialize.
Uh-huh. Well, thank you both very much.
Okay, Marie.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
And Bruce.
Hello. On.
Yeah.
Yes, I was calling because I have a second book by Colonel Stevens. And I wondered if it was possible to write to the original addresses on the books to obtain more books, or due to his situation, is it impossible to get his other books?
No, I think the best thing to do is to write to those addresses. His daughter would be glad, I'm sure, to answer your letter and advise you as to what's available.
Okay. And I had one other question, and that was that in reading these books, and I wasn't sure if I quite followed your answer to the other girl, but there seems to be a lot of information that wants to be that the Pleiadians want to a lot of things they want to say, and I wondered if those things will be coming out in time.
Well, we hope so. As I mentioned earlier, we've had our priorities, and there's just, you know, there's only so much you can do in a 24-hour period. And obviously, it's very expensive to continue an investigation like this. In fact, we more or less terminated this case as far as investigation in 1982 at the beginning. But we hope that eventually, in the next 3 years, there'll be a lot more information appearing on this case. One, and hopefully, will be the contact notes. Another will be this mainstream book, which will cover more or less the inside story. It's being done by a very qualified and very talented investigative reporter. And it should be a very, very, very interesting reading.
I think one of the things to bring up is that your involvement and Wendell's involvement was primarily into the investigation of the case, the validity of it. And that took precedence in your mind.
Totally.
And then the wealth of material that is coming out from this, from Billy Meyer, presents a problem for us over here in that it's in German, and it is costly to translate that into American. I know that when Edmund Slade was over there, that this is one of the things that they want to get done the most, is to have those contact notes translated into English so that we can have those over here, because there are some very powerful things that are said in them.
Yes, and if I might add, once you read Wendell's report and the documentation and his approach to it, and the tests that were done, the entire book is stating a case, but now that the case is stated, I'd like to see what it's being stated about.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I do very much appreciate all that you're doing, and the other thing that I wanted to touch on, but apparently Lee doesn't want to go into it, was what Colonel Stevens is doing now, or what he'll be doing in the future.
Well, he's writing out his current problem, and he has a lot of plans for the future.
And he's in very good health. He's in very good spirits, and
writing like a banshee.
And we haven't heard the last of Wendell. Okay.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.